No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. This week, we're starting something new. We have decided that periodically, we're going to just talk about what's on our minds. If you listen to the show regularly, you know that we usually have a guest that we interview. But today, we're just going to talk. And we hope that you will join in the discussion by calling in at 888-429-5471 or Skyping us at BBS Radio 2. This is especially important because it keeps Kathleen from hogging the microphone and allows me the opportunity to say something. So please, please, please call in. Since we're on the subject, let me introduce my lovely and talented co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from the great state of Arizona. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for helping getting the conversation started.
Hi, Senator. I'm Kathleen Gomez, and welcome to Shadow Politics. Actually, the reason why we're not going to have anyone on today as a guest is that I get the opportunity to say something. Between the both of us, we have a hard time getting to have enough time to express our opinions, which we seem to have a lot about. And I think it's just because we're so old.
Yeah, well, there's the right opinion, and then there's Kathleen's opinion.
Yes, there's the opinion of the realistic Kathleen, who's outside the Beltway, living in the real world in rural Arizona, although really not right now because I'm in Tucson and it's a city of more than a million people, but it's like a small town. But yeah, you know, and living out here in this red state, which is, you know, kind of very red and very interesting to say the least, but it's sunny. It's 68 degrees out here. It's always sunny. As my son who went back to New York called me, you know, he hates the sun, but he called me, says, Mom, I'm freezing. The snow's in my face. I said, well, you hate the sun, so enjoy it. So it's amazing. It seems like you always find something wrong with wherever you are, you know?
Yep. And it is cold out here these days. Not so bad in Washington as it is in New York, but it's cold.
Well, you all have to come out here to Red State, sunny Arizona, where I think maybe the sun sometimes bakes our brains just a little bit too much. But anyway, I'm not going to give you any material to use against me. All I can tell you, this is the real world, not quite D.C., although I am going to come and visit you all over the holidays. So we'll see what happens to me.
We're excited.
Yeah, I'm excited to see you, too.
We've already got you set up for deprogramming. We're gonna turn you back into a Democrat.
That's right. Then I'll be going and stealing guns to turn them into jewelry.
Yeah.
There we go.
Exactly.
And it's kind of sad. Let's talk about that. It was the anniversary of the Newton shootings. I guess it was yesterday.
Yes.
And there was something interesting you said. You were at an activist kind of boot camp or root camp? What do they call it?
Yeah, they call it Roots Camp, but it's what they call a non-conference that brings activists from all over the country together to discuss how we can be better activists. We're all kind of left-wing liberal people and right-wing people, conservatives and Republicans have been doing this for years. Liberals just caught on to it 10 years ago, I guess, and started doing this. And Root Camp's about 6 or 7 years old, I think. And it was great. There were 2,000 people there. But Since you brought up the subject of Newtown, let me tell you that yesterday our guest speaker that started the sessions off was a woman named Shannon Watts. And Shannon Watts has started a thing called Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. And after the Newtown shootings, she was somebody who had a communications background. She's the mom. She's a 42-year-old mother of five children, and she was just torn apart by the what happened in Newtown, 26 dead, 20 little children. And so she started an online group of mothers, and she tried to use the Mothers Against Drunk Driving model to get mothers excited and involved in the gun movement, and she's been very successful. They've really grown and grown and grown, and she's put together an incredibly successful organization. In less than a year, they had 75 local chapters across the country. So they're working hard for sensible gun laws, and that's how we started our day out yesterday.
Well, it's interesting because you said, yeah, there was 28 school shootings since the Newtown shooting, which was a year ago.
Yeah.
That's amazing. We don't hear about that in the media, I don't think.
Well, I don't think we hear about all of them. You know, we certainly hear about the big ones. And of course, the other day, just was it yesterday or the day before in Colorado, just a few miles from where the theater shootings were, there was a 17-year-old who got cut from the debate team and went in to shoot his debate coach, who was the school librarian. The school librarian got wind of this and took off, and he shot a 15-year-old girl who's in critical condition now in the hospital, and shot another kid who I think their wounds are superficial, or at least they're not life-threatening. And then he took his own life. And you know, it's just terrible.
I don't get – you know, Colorado seems to have a lot of these shootings. It makes you wonder what the heck is going on there, you know. But why would you go take a gun and shoot somebody because you got cut from the debate team? Usually those are pretty smart kids.
He was a smart kid. You know, it's funny because I saw a thing on the news about him, and they said he was a good athlete, a good student, well-liked. Yeah, it really is a quandary why young people especially see this as an alternative, you know, shooting people right. And then taking their own lives. I mean, it's just terrible.
I know, just, you know, it just makes you wonder. What?
He bought the shotgun that he used legally. I don't even know how a 17-year-old can buy a shotgun.
If you live maybe out on a farm, out in the country, maybe you can. You know, I think there's different requirements based on if you, you know, they make exceptions if you live out in some states, out on a ranch, or that, you know, you're out there in the woods or whatever. So maybe that was how he got it. I don't know.
Well, you know what? As someone who has been the immediate supervisor of a 17-year-old boy, and I know you have too, you know, I certainly wouldn't hand a gun over to a kid that I have to tell to take out the trash 15 times. You know?
Oh, let me tell you, I wouldn't want to have one because I think at some point I think I would just get I get so irritated at the laziness and, you know, just the know-it-all and the, you know, we were not friends when he was 17 at all. So I'm not saying that I would shoot him, but I would say that I got so angry sometimes that I could see how there could be an accident that might have occurred. If not that, at least I came close to throwing him outside the fifth floor window of where we lived.
Well, you know, that's what my brother, who's a great parent, said to me one time when I was single. I said to him, I just don't understand how people can abuse children. And he said to me, that's because you don't have any. He said, I've never abused any of my children, but I sure as hell can see how it happens.
Yes.
And, you know, after you're a parent, you can see it can be very frustrating sometimes.
Yes, and then you can lose it. You can snap, and they know how to make you snap really easy. They yes. know what'll push that button, and they wanted to see how far they can push you to the edge before you fall. Yet they don't want you to fall off, but they just want to see, like, what it could be like, you know?
That's right.
And they don't
pushing
realize.
Those limits. And that's one of the reasons that you need gun laws, I think, yes. is that you need to keep guns out of certain people's hands. And I think teenagers are one group. Certainly criminals, if you can do it, are another group. The mentally ill certainly yep. shouldn't have. And that leads me to just say what I think is the single most disappointing thing this week in the United States Senate. And that is, despite the fact that 90% of the American people believe in background checks, that the United States Senate this week couldn't pass a bill requiring background checks for gun purchases. And that's just terrible, especially when 90% of the people in America believe in it.
That's true. But then you had another disturbing statistic that you told me where, what was it, 51% of Americans feel that there shouldn't be changes made to gun laws that
yeah,
exist?
That's changed. I read a thing that and that's changed dramatically from a year ago, right after the Newtown shootings. A much higher percentage of people, I think 20% more, you know, up in the upper 60s were for changes in gun laws, thought that there needed to be some changes in gun laws. I guess the good news is only 8% of America thinks that gun laws are too strict. But 51%, a majority, think that they're okay, that we don't need any more laws.
It's just, you know, I think people have gotten so frustrated with laws, and I guess especially when I think about it for me, it's the fact that a lot of these laws are never enforced. And, you know, it just comes to the point where, I mean, I still feel firmly on how I believe when you're out in the middle of these isolated places like in Arizona, like where my sister is, and there's nobody that's going to come to your aid, I think you do need to have the ability to protect yourself. And that's what I was so impressed with the gentleman that came on from, what was the organization, Americans Against Gun Violence?
Yeah, yes.
Where he said that it really kind of should be determined by where you live, because everything is different and it's not the same as living in New York City. Heck, I wouldn't want guns to be really, you know, everyone says, yeah, well, the bad guys got the guns. Yeah, they do in a way, but I mean, I think so much more of the statistics in New York City are people shooting each other who know one another, you know, where it's different. It's just the makeup of that area is different than the makeup of living on a ranch in, you know, near the border out in the desert. You can't compare the two. It's like comparing Mars with a peanut. There's just nothing that relates, you know, other than it's a planet and we're human. That's about the only thing that has in common. So, you know, I thought he was really good. And I guess this is the other point I want to bring up. Since we started the show, I think it was, what, in April? Our whole reason for the show was that we wanted to bring together people who had different opinions and on very passionate, maybe on opposite ends, to talk about issues to see what we had in common ground. And I think you might agree with me, Senator Brown, that both of us, you and I, there were different people that we talked to. I thought I was going to have nothing in common with. And that was kind of this guy who was, you know, with the organization against Americans for Against Gun Violence. And I thought, well, you know, he's going to be the typical guy. But he wasn't. He made some kind of very good sense. And he wasn't against guns. And he thought that, you know, where people needed to protect themselves, they should have them. And he also felt that, you know, each area was very different and unique. And those people should have a say on what the gun laws are pertaining to where they are. Although we all agree, and I think all Americans agree, that there should be some kind of background check, except, you know, we haven't dealt into the National Registry, which really ticks a lot of people off. And I know that you were talking to people like our last guest, who was, oh my gosh, that's why I can never be a politician, should have her name up here, that she was completely against any kind of amnesty for anybody, you know, the Dream Act, against it all. But she had some very, very good reasons for her belief. And I came around and kind of felt like I could see where she was coming from. I could agree with a lot of what she said. So I think that we have done something in that we're good examples of showing that if you talk and you have a forum in which you can come together and know that you're coming from different viewpoints, but talk it out, it's amazing how you can have so much in common.
Well, first of all, her name was Yolanda Lewis.
That's it.
And second of all, you can't be in politics because they do background checks.
I don't know about that. I wonder.
We have Lynn on the phone. Let's talk to her for a second and see what she has to say. Okay, Lynn, are you with us?
Lynn, yes, hello, Senator Michael Brown and Kathleen.
How are you, Lynn?
To talk about this country and the violence and the coping skills that I guess the education system, and especially related to healthcare, and sort of what's been going on with all the violence, and how do we go about creating the new paradigm with the healthcare system, with these multicultural healing teaching transformation centers for kids to work on meditation, ascension programs, and art, music, sound, movements, all these new therapies that could be integrated as our new health and human services and go across the board even for social services as far as being of and getting them on their sole purpose and why they're really here, networking them and growing that inner light and getting a whole new, like I said, health and human service division opened up. How would we do that?
Well, I'm not sure the best way to do that, Lynn, but I agree with you that we need to start taking some different approaches to this, because obviously the kind of stuff that we're doing is not working. You know, certainly America has always been a violent culture, but there's a certain type of violence that's going on now that I don't think we've ever seen before. So I think you're right. I think we need to explore ways to get into the school system and nurture people. I mean, this recent thing with this kid that was cut from the debate team. Gee, when I was a high school student, I don't think you would have heard of something like this. Somebody being cut from the debate team and seeing this as a response to that. You know, and where that became part of the paradigm that we now have, I don't know.
Well, I feel that there's two different situations that are taking place with the violent video games and the recruitment for the robotic warfare. I mean, we still have free education teaching training for the military-industrial complex, and it's the only free education for those in poverty. And that's a problem. And then also, the other problem is that the kids, when you start drugging them as toddlers and labeling and drugging the kids, and even all the vaccinations that they're giving them, you're training them that they need drugs. They're not okay. They have to have these drugs. And then they're going into the, you know, insurance hospital industrial complex with drugs and big pharma. So between the street drugs and the labeling and the drugs, it's just so frustrating. And what do they have to look forward to?
Kathleen, go ahead.
I agree with you so much about the vaccinations and immunizations at a young age. I know that we need some of them, but I'll never forget I was in a play group with this young girl, and we were the same age, and our sons were just around the two age, and her son had a little bit of a flu. She went in for those three common that they give together, rubella, measles, and I forget the other one, and I was shocked. Literally within a week, the kid was, he was autistic, very severely autistic. And I remember following that whole issue because my children were young. And, you know, I went to the pediatrician and I said, I don't care. There seems to be a pattern. I don't want them, my children, to get the three together. I'll bring them in separately to get each one of them separately. But, you know, they don't do much research and they deny it to the, you know, till they are blue in the face. But I remember that on the Hill, actually, it was a very conservative politician who his grandchildren had had the same thing happen. And he was having these hearings. I think it was a committee on family issues or whatever. And it's still a debate. And I think you're right. I think we drug them for everything. If they're not still, if they're, you know, have a lot of energy, well, you give them the drugs for that. And in a sense, I don't think that we're of people of faith very much anymore. You know, we're tied to the TV on the weekends. We don't go out with our kids. We don't have any way for them to learn the lessons that I knew I was raised. And so I think that what you're talking about is something that's very important to bring into back into society, whether it's meditation or getting back in touch with earth and what's important, not the PlayStation, not the, you know, getting. And I think kids, the other problem too, our kids are so competitive. I remember when we were in these gifted schools in New York City in sixth grade, they're already, you know, stressing to them about their SATs that, you know, are in 12th grade, and they start studying for them. So we've got them so competitive. We've got them so stressed out. We've got them on all kinds of anxiety issues. The world is so much smaller. You know, when 9/11 happened, I saw my son. He was in first grade. All the kids just had became so phobia against so many things, you know, against going into a taxi with someone who had a turban, you know, disliking anybody who is from the Middle East. I mean, so, and we never, I remember at that time, you know, Bloomberg said, or it was Bloomberg or Giuliani said, we're going to actually make sure that these kids that have gone through this, we're all going to talk about it. We're going to have some kind of therapy in the schools. That never happened. And to this day, those kids who are now 20 are very, very, you know, damaged by it. And they've never had anything to help them heal with anger and the grief and the fear. So I agree with you. We have to start thinking of new things because we've changed the way things have been in almost every aspect of our society.
And, you know, something else that bothers me that's not quite as dramatic as what you're talking about, Kathleen, but I think Lynn's right about this, is that the amount of drugs, you know, we seem to use Ritalin for everything with little kids. And it seems to me that the downside of that is you never get people like Albert Einstein, people outside the box, people outside the, you know, when you're trying to push everybody in the same direction. Could we have had an Albert Einstein or a Vincent van Gogh or a Michelangelo, or would they have all been put on Ritalin now?
And they're saying now that in certain areas there are up to 30 vaccinations before school.
Oh, my God, yes. Yes. And you know what?
Our main health and human services that Kathleen Sebelius is president of, if you look at it inside the building, there's trillions of dollars being devoted to these major vaccination farms.
Yeah.
This is our health care system. Our healthcare system is so insane. It's just if we could get, and the sadness is for me, I've been around these healing arts, you know, shiatsu. There's medical hypnosis, by the way, with an insurance code worldwide that's already healing moderate to severe psychiatric disorders, cancer, autoimmune diseases, dyslexia, asthma, on and on. And what's happened, no one knows. It's just like all these beautiful renewable energies that the corporations keep down, keep out, buy out, shut them down. Well, we have in Denver, the Body, Mind, Spirit Expo people, they've been doing Body, Mind, Spirit healing expos, you know, with different Reikis and ATP and SC, all beautiful, beautiful, beautiful programs. Healing arts, all these, you know, yoga, everything. Anyway, since like for 45 years, You know, these should be, if kids are doing these different, being taught and trained how to go into these centers instead of juvie halls and jails and,
right.
you know, on and on, then, you know, we could shift everything. But, and to be able to offer them as a, you know, health and human service, not all the drugging, you know, and that whole paradigm that really is all about healing. It should be, you know, healing people.
Well, it's interesting.
You know,
I'm sorry,
Kathleen. Another thing, we keep on talking over each other. I'm sorry. But another thing that I wanted to point out is the EPA just released a study yesterday of all the antibiotics in the water system and how dangerous they think it is that they found just dozens of different antibiotics in the water system because our society is so full of them these days, from everything from livestock to people, that they're getting into the water system and they're not getting filtered out. So that's another problem, too.
And you know, these kids, when you talk about, you know, we drug them so young, they get used to it. So now when my son was getting ready for exams, we were talking and he was telling me how Ritalin is the drug of choice when you're doing your exams because it makes you focus. You know, you can, you don't get, I guess, what you would call, you know, the squirrelies or all that. You just sit down and you focus and you can stay up for long periods of time. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that's how they are depending on how to study these days, instead of, you know, doing it the wise way without having drugs and all these terrible after effects that Ritalin has. If you're fine and you're taking Ritalin to study to pass your exams, what are you going to do for the, you know, as you get older? You're just going to turn, I guess, to what, the cocaines and everything else that goes on.
Well, you know,
methamphetamine came from Ritalin. The methamphetamine use actually came from kids in school doing trades and sharing. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, you know, this is all the bad news. But the good news is that, as we just pointed out, this woman, Shannon Watts, got on the internet and got upset about gun violence, and she's organized in less than a year 75 chapters across the country. So that's the kind of things we need to do. We need to get moms involved. We need to get people active in putting pressure on politicians to change things. You know, it's funny. There's something about women from Indiana, because there was a woman from Indiana that I used to fight with named Phyllis Schlafly. Do you remember her, Kathleen?
Yes,
and
I do.
She defeated the Equal Rights Amendment. These, you know, so moms and moms against drunk driving, look at the impact that they've had. So if we can organize, you know, if we can organize moms and other people to take action and put pressure on Congress, then maybe we can change some of these things.
How do you go about that? A new Earth jobs bill for, you know, getting the green armies worldwide for the, you know, infrastructures and all the green projects and the new foods and, you know, natural foods and remedies and what have you. But really also, too, that people don't realize the power of Big Pharma. The pharmaceutical.
Well, you know what?
You really are up against it.
With you know, there's certainly a lot of corporate money, but I think you do it through the internet. You do it through look at what a simple thing like Twitter did in the Middle East. You know, you had a revolution occur through people getting on the internet and connecting with each other. So I think that's what we need to do. Well, Lynn, I thank you so much for calling in. We want to move on to a couple other subjects, but thanks again for talking to us. We hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn.
What I'd like to talk about for a minute is, first of all, since we're dedicated to the idea that the District of Columbia has to be a state, I want to send out my thanks to Representative Paul Tonko from New York's 20th District, Kathleen's old state,
mm-hmm.
Who signed on this week to the new Columbia Admission Act, which would make the District of Columbia the 51st state. So thank you, Representative Tonko. We appreciate your support. But another thing I'd like to talk briefly about with you, Kathleen, because you're a Catholic and I was raised a Catholic. This week, Rush Limbaugh called the Pope a Marxist.
And you know, this is very interesting because among the Catholics, among the ones who are very conservative and like the old way of doing things, the more traditional stuff, the Latin masses, he is a pope that is causing a lot of stir because he is more of a people's pope, you know, and in fact, he doesn't wear the red shoes. He doesn't wear, you know, he doesn't walk with a gold cross. He walks with a wooden cross, which I was having a conversation with somebody who was very upset about that because they felt that, you know, the Pope should have the gold and the finery and all that because he's a leader. And I said, yes, but Jesus walked not with a gold cross. He walked with his wooden cross that he was later crucified on. So really, this Pope is getting back to what Catholicism was in the Ten Commandments, but you know he is really something else. This Pope but Rush Limbaugh, I mean that guy's talk about a guy who was on drugs. That guy was on all kinds of drugs, and yet you know it's okay with that he's on drugs or was on drugs. I'm saying I'm sure now he says he went to rehab and he's cured. Right. But my gosh, I mean how hypocritical can you get?
Well, you know that's the thing that I love. What you're talking about, this Pope getting back to basic Catholicism. That's why Rush Limbaugh attacked him, because he said that there should not be unfettered capitalism, you know, that money shouldn't rule everything. Well, isn't this what Christ said in the Bible? I mean, don't we have the scene with the money changers in the temple?
Yes.
And you know, so how you can criticize this man for preaching the gospel is really beyond me. But the thing that I found most astounding, Kathleen, when I looked into this, is Rush Limbaugh, who, you know, has a high school education. He mm-hmm. went to college for a couple of semesters but flunked out. He has 15 million listeners. He's the highest paid person in radio. He's paid he just signed a contract recently for $400 million. Now, you could get Kathleen and I for half of that. But
yes, easy. I would say maybe a lot less, and at least we'd be diverse.
Right, and we're way more educated.
Yes.
And we're a lot more fun, and we're not haters.
Right.
You know, it really, really bothers me that this guy, who I never hear anything from but hate, he is a real hate monger. And, you know, I used to think he was stupid. He's not stupid. He's evil. And that's a lot worse. If you're out there and you're a fan of Rush Limbaugh's, please call us and explain to me why.
Yes.
Because I don't get it.
And I don't understand it. And I think someone like him has created the situation that we're in now, where no one can agree to disagree. No one can sit down and break bread together unless you absolutely think the same. And if you don't think the same, then you're an idiot. And, you know, they call you all kinds of names, which I grew up, you don't call people names. Even if they are an idiot in your head and you think they are, you don't go on a national, you know, radio talk show and start calling people idiots and fat and ugly and everything else, because it creates an environment of complete, you know, who wants to talk to you unless you're going to be exactly say what that person wants to hear. I mean, people like him and O'Reilly and all these guys, Hennigan, they have no room to sit there and actually listen to what somebody else's beliefs are and try to come to some kind of agreement together. And I think they've created the situation that we are in now. I mean, I think of Walter Cronkite, you know, who just reported the news and, you know, you kind of trusted the guy. He really didn't, you know, make these outlandish comments about people and call them names and try to degrade them. And that's what we become, a society that I want to listen to you because I know you're going to say bad things about somebody and that's what I want to hear. I mean, I think that's why these kids are doing what they're doing. There's no compassion. There's no room for understanding that we're not teaching the children to actually, you know, walk in somebody else's shoes before you pass judgment. My grandfather and mother's, my parents always told me that, and I try to use that as a rule. And I realize, okay, well, you know, maybe they're right. Maybe I should hold my judgment because, you know, maybe this guy doesn't have any soles on his shoes and it's hard for him to walk. I mean, we don't.
Well, that's why you and I don't get along, because you wear 5-inch heels. You wear 5-inch heels, and I can't walk in those.
Well, that's true.
I've tried to walk in your shoes, but it's not. Well, what about our friend Dan Rather? You and I spent the day with Dan Rather. What a wonderful man, right?
Right.
What a great, generous, polite, you know, brilliant guy. And how many people, Kathleen, on that day came up to tell that man how much they loved him?
Well, let's explain what happened. We were at the convention in it was Denver, right?
Denver, yeah.
And this is like the one before, when Obama was first got to run as for president. And I had some friends who were the media, who were the people who issue press credentials. And you had told me that the people who were running, the young kids that were running the convention, when Dan Rather asked for 2 tickets for himself and his grandson, they didn't know who he was. Or
they didn't want to give it to him. They didn't want to give them to the grandson because the grandson wasn't a member of the press.
That's right.
Now, you have to understand, one thing that Kathleen's leaving out is there's like 60,000 tickets to this thing.
Exactly.
It's in a stadium. It's not like, you know, like 100 people are going to show up.
No, it was in the stadium. It was like the big ceremony where he was going to become the Democratic candidate. And it's so many people, and there's just so many, I mean, passes out there. And so through my friends, when I said this to them, they said, oh, my God, I can't believe it. Here's two passes. We took him, and I mean, from the janitor to the person selling the sodas and it was the workers. Did you notice? And even remember Diane Sawyer came over, and I'm trying to think of the guy who was on the Good Morning Show.
Oh, yeah.
At the time. The tall, bald-headed guy.
Yeah, what's Harry Smith.
Harry Smith. All these people went over, and just to say hello to him, they were, you know, in such admiration of the guy. Yet, because of that one mistake he made, you know, what was it you were telling me? That CBS didn't even have him on, or no actually media station had him on. He was the one that was reported with John F. K. was killed. He was there. And
right.
He was very involved in the situation. Not one radio station, not one media, you know, had interviewed him on that issue. And it's really sad. It's really sad because I've never met a nicer man in my life.
Yeah,
and
never.
So well respected. And here again, I mean, you know, it was a terrible thing. It was really sad to see. But I think, you know, however he may have been ignored by the media, so-called media consultants or whatever, it made up, I know, tenfold by the amount of people that came and stopped. They didn't care what they were doing. They were like, even if it meant their job, they were going to go over and tell him how much they admired him and respected him.
Well, we're going to take a short break here and play a song from Stevie Wonder that we love, that has all our hopes for Christmas time. And we hope you'll call us at 888-429-5471 and become part of the conversation. But here's a song from Stevie Wonder, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Someday at Christmas, men won't be boys, playing with bombs like kids play with toys. One warm December, our hearts will see a world where men are free. Someday at Christmas there'll be no wars, when we have learned what Christmas is for, when we have found what...
And that was one of my favorite Christmas songs by Stevie Wonder, who's one of my all-time favorite artists. One thing Kathleen and I talked about at the break that we want to talk about is this thing that I went to for 2 days this week, which was Roots Camp. And Roots Camp is basically a unconference for people who are organizers and activists around the country to get together and exchange ideas, meet each other, and learn from each other. And they call it an unconference because you're allowed to make up the agenda when you're there, which is very interesting. We get there, and they ask you to fill out a card on what you would like to talk about and who you would like to lecture and what your issues are. So I did one on statehood, and they accepted it. And we had about 20 people in our room on 15 minutes notice to talk about statehood. So that was great. But I also learned a lot of things. I learned about putting on commercials on YouTube and how to use Twitter a little better, and some of the interesting changes in technology. And you know, for an old school, for guys like Kathleen and I, you know, we did it by pressing the flesh. We did it by putting stuff in the mail and walking around and shaking people's hands. In fact, I was a direct mail. I was in charge of in-house direct mail programs, and Kathleen was a big fundraiser. She was the kind of person that put on events and dealt with major donors. So yes, that's what we did. It was a personal. It was a personal thing when you reached out to, but. Now it's less personal, but oh my God, I tweeted a few things. I'm just getting to be a little, I'm a baby tweeter. I'm just starting it out. But I tweeted a few things, and I got back to my office, and an hour later they had been tweeted all over the place and retweeted, and you know, 30, 40, 50 tweets coming in to me about people that have retweeted my messages and stuff. So it was just an amazing experience, not only to see the change in technology, but also it gives you great hope when you see young people who are engaged and who want to change the world. They want to make the world a better place, and they want to make it a better place for the people that are on the outside, poor people and gay people and people that are not in the mainstream of society. So that was very encouraging. And I learned a lot. In fact, that was one of my tweets. One of my tweets was, today I found out they're wrong. You can teach an old dog new tricks, because I learned a few new things.
And did they retweet that?
That they didn't retweet.
the bad world.
The bad comments I made about people in the District of Columbia, that's what they retweeted. You know, they didn't retweet, but they did retweet some good stuff too about DC statehood and how 80% of the people in America stand with us. And, you know, so we did all, you know, it was a very, very positive day. And, you know, it gets back to what you were talking about earlier, Kathleen, that you saw all, you know, when we talked to the libertarians and the Republicans and the Constitutional Party, that we saw that there were some things that they all had in common. Mm-hmm. There was a common ground on which we all could stand. And we don't have to, you know, be so divisive in America. And I think we found, I saw a lot of that. Of course, the people were liberal activists. They were all kind of on the same side. But regardless of what the issue was, whether your issues were – there were people there from Nuns on the Bus and people from, you know, on gay rights groups, and people right. from there was a booth there for I'm Ready for Hillary. There were all sorts of groups. And, you know, but there was a great camaraderie, even with the old guy. I mean, I was so old.
Were you the oldest there?
I think the shoes I had on were older than most of the people that were there, you know, but they all accepted me, and they were all, you know, very nice to me and very helpful. And yeah, I was definitely one of the oldest people there.
Well, they have to also remember that, you know, there were people before them who did great things and really, yeah, you know, worked the cause. That you just think, if we had had the kind of tools that they have now. I mean, I remember sitting. Do you remember I had to raise money and send out these letters, and it took me all weekend because I had to sit there and put the paper into. And we thought we were high tech because it was like printer, but you had to feed in the paper one by one because it was nothing that was just an automatic feed. And I remember just sitting there and just feeding this paper. I had to do like 500 and it took me all weekend long. Now I don't even think they would bother sending a letter. They'll do an email or a tweet or a Facebook or whatever it is. And I wonder how they keep on top of it, because just in the past year or the past, say, 6 months since we've been doing this radio show, I've been trying to become technically savvy. And it seems every time I get a handle on one thing, something else comes up. Like now it's Snapchat, not Instagram. Snapchat has replaced that. And then, you know, it's just one thing after another. And how do you even find out about what is the new thing? That's the other problem.
I don't know, but there were plenty of things they talked about at Root Camp that just went, whew, right over my head. I had no idea. And everybody, they would say something and everybody in the audience would nod. 2,000 people, 1,999 people. I was the only one looking like, what the hell is going on? But you talk about feeding the letters in the word process one at a time. How about 15 of us sitting together in a hotel room at 3 o'clock in the morning while Debbie Miller went card by card by card,
yes.
Remember? And
oh,
this thing,
God.
Change that, you know.
I remember
amazing.
That was, remember Wendy from, where was she, from Oregon, who was a cop who almost.
Oh, yeah.
Took our gun to her. That goes way back, because it was very frustrating, because you know we would stay up hours like all night long, and it would just be the most she was so, I don't even know if it was nitpicky or just a control freak, but she drove us all insane. But yeah, I do remember us sitting around 15, and we were actually doing the seating arrangements, I think, for an event where you had to be sure who sat by who, you know, and stuff like that. But I'm glad you went and got a little bit, you know, kind of some new ideas, so that when I come out there, we can think. Because what is sad to me is that Rush Limbaugh can make that kind of money based on hate, yet, you know, we're struggling to try to find an audience. And we're not that we are all like, you know, gushy-gushy and liberal. We have some really serious debates and we have different viewpoints. But is it really true that no one really cares to hear that? They just want to hear the hate. Somebody out there's got to call us in. I mean, that's the other thing. Just don't be afraid. Michael won't bite your head off and we won't track you. So please call us at 888-429-5471 and let us know what you think of our show and maybe what we can do in the future too that you would be interested in. So hopefully out there there's someone who's going to actually call us. That's not related to us. We don't have to pay.
Right. Well, you know, I'm sure that over time, if we keep this going long enough, that'll happen more and more, because I hear so much when I'm out there, you know, as a politician, this is campaign season in Washington. So I'm out there and everybody but me is campaigning, because I got reelected in 2012 to 6-year term. But a lot of people are up. And so politics is on everybody's mind here in the District of Columbia. And I hear a lot of great ideas from people. I mean, you know, just in casual conversation. We went to a party tonight, and there's a lovely lady named Debbie Shore, and she started a foundation and a organization here in Washington, D.C. that called Sasha Bruce, which helps homeless teenagers and runaway teenagers. And they've just done the greatest work. And, you know, to have so many people like this in a community who are doing positive things, who are working hard to make the city a better place, who are helping disadvantaged people, and to not have them get the airtime or the venue or the, right, you know, the ability to get their cause out while we listen to these what's the French have a word? Oh yeah, jackasses like Rush Limbaugh. You know, I mean, these people on the that are in the extreme right wing are haters, and I don't know how we get the good people out there, because that's really what.
And what amazes me about the Catholics is that, you know, part of the belief of the Pope is that God speaks to, He chooses the Pope. And, you know, he comes and he actually, you know, visits the bishops or whatever that choose him. And then he speaks, and that it's his decision on who gets chosen. And it's amazing how many Catholics say, oh, well, no, that's not my pope, you know, because they don't like the way he's leading. You know, that's your leader. And no matter whether you like it, if you're a true Catholic, you're supposed to follow the leader, because he has his ear is you know, God's voice is speaking in his ear. So, you know, we've come to this point in our society where, oh, yeah, well, that right now that's not for me. You know, you don't have to follow the rules. You just decide when you don't want to do it anymore, and that's okay. And that gives me crazy. That tends to make me become a fallen Catholic, because either you're going to go by the rules and not just when it suits you. One thing I want to say before the show ends, which it's coming pretty close, is that I want to mention that our show is available for free downloads on iTunes and also on Stitcher.com, which is a real interesting program. It's you can download it on your car, or your app, or whatever, and listen to all kinds of talk show programs, and also to Fall River Community Radio for picking up our show. So thank you to those organizations. We appreciate it very much. And
talking about people that are out there doing good work and making the world a better place, why don't you tell everybody what you're doing for veterans over Christmas in Tucson?
Well, next Saturday, anybody who's in the Tucson area, in Cochise or Pima County, the Tucson Veterans Home, you know, these guys are veterans that are kind of ill and don't have any places to go, and they stay in the veteran homes. They really don't have anyone to talk to. So the guy that I'm working with, Jay Allen, who we've had on our show before, he is the founder of the Broken Spoke Saloon and really an icon in the motorcycle industry, you know, a speed racer on Bonneville Flats, and he's just done a lot of stuff in the motorcycle industry. He, on commemorating the 25th anniversary of the Rolling Thunder, those are the guys that built the Vietnam Wall, they designed or had master builders, one Billy Lane, everyone in the motorcycle industry knows him, and Bridget, I never say her name, Bourget, I think her name is, and Dar Hodsworth and Mike Thomas, they all created a bike from scratch to represent each branch of the service: Army, Marines, Navy, Air Force, and Coast Guard. And so we're taking those bikes on the Saturday to the Tucson Veterans Home, because it's amazing how many soldiers and how many veterans rode motorcycles. I don't want to say bicycles, rode motorcycles. And so when they see these bikes, they're just so beautiful. I've never really been into had a bike or been in that kind of culture, but I mean, these bikes are gorgeous, and we're going to take them to the veterans home, and we bring them out, and they bring out the veterans, and they take pictures, and they get to sit on them, and then we just ask, you know, anybody who wants to come on that's either a motorcycle enthusiast or wants to just, you know, spend some time with the veterans to come out and join us. It's 555 East Ajo Way. They got a beautiful courtyard, and then the next day we're actually going to the Tucson Harley-Davidson dealership where they'll have food, and that's from 10 to 1. And what we'd like to do is get sponsorship so that we can take these bikes all over the United States to veterans' homes and to the bases. And, you know, it's just kind of something that, you know, I know there's a lot of programs that do a lot for the veterans, you know, give them homes and help them with their bills. But this is kind of something different. You know, it's something that just brings tugs of their heart because they used to ride a bike. And it's you know, it's just kind of a recreational morale kind of lifter, and I'm excited. I'll be going to it for my first time, and I've heard so many good things about it. So please come out and join us 12 to 1, 4 on Saturday at the Tucson Veterans Home.
Well, you know, I've been riding motorcycles for 44 years. I still have a Harley-Davidson, and I got to tell you, I've seen all these bikes, and they're just amazing, and it's just fun to go out there and see them and see the work and the love that goes into each one of these. Each one of them is very representative of the service that it represents. And I think the Marine bike, isn't that woman that designed, one of them was designed by a woman,
yes,
right?
And she's
a former Marine. Is she?
Well, I think her father was a former Marine, and she actually has, I got to put it on Facebook. If anyone wants to go and see what these are, it's Armed Forces Tribute bikes, and they're on Facebook, and I'm going to put up a letter that she had written. It was like a story of this bike, of a veteran that came from the Vietnam War, and it kind of ties into this bike, and it's got a pinup girl on it. And I really recommend that you guys go onto this site and like it and look at these bikes, because they're really, really beautiful. And Billy Lane, you know, each one of these master builders did not take any money for it. They built them from scratch, and they did it all free because they all believe in the military and all the soldiers and veterans who have done so much to keep our freedoms, you know, secure for us. So yeah, it's a really great thing. And I guess in that mode of thinking, we hope that whether it's the veterans home or a nursing home, that we remember all those people who don't maybe have families, or who through illness or whatever their situation is in a nursing home or a, you know, what do they call them, a care hospice or a hospital or the veterans home, take a little time, and maybe instead of going to the mall to get that great deal, maybe go spend it with somebody who doesn't get any visitors. And I think you'd be feeling much better than maybe getting that nice blouse or the PlayStation or whatever it is for maybe 10 or 15 bucks cheaper.
Well, you know what? And first of all, Kathleen is a very modest woman. I think, didn't you hang out with the Hells Angels in Tucson when you were, she doesn't like to brag about the fact that she was the Hells Angels pinup girl of 1985, but really it is a great thing to do. And just remember that you can never be too kind to a veteran, because veterans, we all wouldn't enjoy the freedom and the democracy and the wonderful country that we have if it weren't for those brave men and women who were willing to step up and say, look, I'll put everything on the line for America. So we should, especially at this time of year, put ourselves out a little bit for them. Well, it looks we're running out of time here.
I know. And I was just going to quote about, you know, you don't hear any Christmas carolers anymore either. We used to always go, remember, and you're in Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or whatever, and you would go sing Christmas carols at the hospitals and veterans homes. And so we need to go back to that a little bit more. But yes, we are. We never managed to run out of something to talk about, which I guess, I don't know what that says about you. About me, I guess it just says I have a lot to say.
You have a lot to say. And let me tell you, I think you're absolutely right about the last point you made. And I'm going to practice all week. And maybe next week at the break, I can sing a few Christmas carols.
That would be really good. That would be entertaining in itself. And then I come out. Then after that, I'll be out there in D.C. and see how much has changed since I was last there.
Everything's pretty much the same. The Washington Monument's still where it was.
Can you get to it? That's my question. Can you get to the Washington Monument?
Well, they're just taking the scaffolding off it now. It's been under scaffolding for a couple of years, and you couldn't go, but now you can.
All right.
So anyway, America, we hope you're out there Christmas shopping, making the economy a better place, and improving the economy, and we wish you the best of holiday seasons, and we'll see you next Sunday.
Yes.
We'll talk next Sunday.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you, America, and call us next time.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.